All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 31-24 victory over the Carolina Panthers in Week 2.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for a very long time at FalcFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. And, of course, I am the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is our rapid reaction from Week 2's win with the Falcons prevailing over the Carolina Panthers by a score of 31-24. Really strong offensive performance. As usual with the Falcons, things got a little hairy there towards the end with the Panthers potentially driving and almost tying up the game on the last play of the game to potentially send it into overtime. But of course, the Falcons managed to get by with the skin of their teeth, win this victory. But, you know, that despite that finish, shouldn't dismay us or dissuade us or whatever that word is from taking a lot of positive from the offensive performance. We talked quite a bit this week about how the offense and the Falcons coaching staff would have to sort of inspire this team to get more out of them in light of some of the injuries that they had. Didn't think this Panther team was a great matchup for the Falcons, given some of those injuries, given some of the offensive struggles we saw in Week 1 and we've seen regularly under Steve Sarkisian. I will be the first to admit how wrong I was about the outcome of this game. Thought the Panthers would wind up winning this one in the end, but the Falcons offense did enough to sort of mask some of the defensive deficiencies, and we'll talk about some of those. We'll talk about the positives as well, but all credit goes to the Falcons to not fall into the 0-2 hole, get this win at home against a Panthers team that isn't great, but has given them fits over the last year or two with, you know, some of the struggles that Sark and his offense have had scoring against this defense in three games against this scheme. If you count the Buffalo game from last year, they only averaged about 18 points in those games. And so to get 31 today was a big breakthrough for the Falcons offense. And it's certainly a sort of redemption game for Sark and several players on the Falcons offense. And with that being said, let's talk about, you know, sort of then. Let's start with Sark. I think he called a pretty good game. The fact that the Falcons were able to dial up, you know, seven 20-plus yard plays, big plays, certainly stands out to me. Longtime listeners of this podcast know I'm a big believer in the correlation between explosiveness and scoring points. The Falcons were able, you know, six of their seven big plays came on the Falcons' five scoring drives. I don't think that's a coincidence. The one outlier in that regard was an interception on the opening drive of the third quarter where Matt Ryan threw an interception right after a 30-yard gain from Julio Jones, which, again, that interception occurred inside the five-yard line on a deep ball when Ryan was hit as he threw. And even if, you know, if that play doesn't become an interception, it's very likely that the Falcons score on that drive as well, because at that point, if that pass is completed, it's potentially a touchdown. But also where they were at the line of scrimmage was on that particular play was like 5 yards away from Matt Bryant's field goal range. So basically, if they had gotten 5 yards without that interception, they would have probably scored on that drive as well. So again, more illustrations of the correlation between generating chunk yardage and scoring points, and particularly going up against a very physical and tough Carolina Panther defense that isn't going to necessarily allow you to string together these long drives due to your ability to convert on third downs. We saw that early in the game where the Falcons, sort of their initial scoring drive, had forced them to have to try to convert three third downs. They only converted two of those. But what was notable was that the Falcons were able to convert 6 of 11 third downs in this game. They were, you know, technically 7 for 12 because the 12th one was a phantom pass interference call against Dante Jackson, where he just gave the slightest of shoves to Calvin Ridley in his back and he fell, and they called DPI. Obviously, even when the referees blow calls, you'll take what you can get. One of the things I'll be interested to look back on the film of this game is looking at those explosive plays. But a lot of them, from what I could noticed watching it live were just good individual plays. Ridley had one on a shallow cross in the second half where he just got a good block from Sanu and did a nice job after the catch. He had another big one, on some yak on a crosser as well. There were two runs in the first half by Tevin Coleman that were just good runs and good blocking. Nothing necessarily that schematically or design-wise that you needed to draw up. Just get a hat on a hat and break some tackles and you're good to go. I also want to look at the third down calls on film as well. Again, two of their big plays came on third downs. They had two touchdowns as well on third downs, which was huge for the red zone conversion systems. I believe they were 4-for-4 today after going 1-for-5 last week, if I'm not mistaken. The numbers jumble up. One of them was a scramble by Matt Ryan on a touchdown where he basically did his best John Elway impression and diving, making a leaping dive for the end zone and getting hit by three Panther defenders, not necessarily doing the full helicopter like Elway did in the Super Bowl many, many years ago. I know some of you guys are like, what are you talking about? And that saddens me that 20 years ago, some of you guys weren't old enough to even remember that Super Bowl with Elway and the Packers, right, in 97? Right, anyway, doesn't matter. But that's basically what Matt Ryan did, which, you know, great performance from Matt Ryan, great gritty performance. We talked a little bit about him sort of bouncing back this week. Typically he does after a rocky game, being at home, being against a defense that he's pretty familiar with, I think contributed to that. But, you know, he basically played really well. He had time to throw in this game. He only was hit twice in this game, in contrast to last week where he hit 13 times. But, you know, in previous instances, Matt Ryan, you know, on a third down in the red zone, Matt Ryan would slide and settle for the field goal. But I think given some of the team's issues in the red zone as of late, Matt Ryan was not going to be denied on the score. So he went for it all on that particular play. But wrapping up my thoughts sort of on the third down issues were the fact simple that, you know, the Falcons were able to get into some fairly manageable third downs in this game. Quite a bit. I saw, you know, they were 4-for-6 when they were facing third and short, which is 6 yards or less to go on third down, and 2-for-5 on third and long, which is a pretty good percentage, frankly. So, you know, when they had 7 or more yards to go, to go 2-for-5 on it and convert 40% of your third downs is pretty big. Ridley had that 22-yard crosser and a touchdown on two of those third and longs. Looks like, you know, you could say that maybe Ridley is, you know, Mohamed Sanu was looking over his shoulder, looking at who that guy might be the go-to chain mover moving forward for the Falcons. Certainly a big confidence-boosting game for Calvin Ridley being that sort of reliable third-down outlet, particularly with Julio Jones not having a monster game. Thanks a lot to, I think, the Panthers rightfully and understandably choosing James Bradberry to shadow him, because you don't want to get Julio on Dante Jackson very often. So the Panthers played it right and were able to keep Julio mostly contained in this game for that reason. Again, I think James Bradberry is a very underrated cornerback in this division. And, you know, but the Falcons were able to get other players to step up and spread the ball around and get other players to step up. We'll talk more about the importance of the Falcons' running game and as well as turning our attention to the defense in just a bit. But you guys know that ever since I started this podcast, people have always asked me for advice. Usually it's on who to bet. And truth is, I don't know who's going to win, especially this weekend. But if you guys think you know, then you got to check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, guys, they're the best bet you'll make this year. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to use. I'd only recommend a service that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, over and unders for on fantasy points scored, and they have the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll even give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25. when you deposit after 7 p.m. to get that extra $25 free play when creating your account. You play, you win, you get paid. Let's talk about the Falcons running game, which was a big part of, I think, why the Falcons were able to get so many third manageables, keep this offense on schedule, and make things easy for Sark. They were very successful on the ground in this game. Coleman had 107 yards rushing on 16 carries, snapping the Panthers' 21-game streak of preventing a 100-yard rusher. Ito Smith also contributed nicely off the bench, rushing for 46 yards on 9 carries. Both of those guys each had success rates of 50% or higher, which, as you guys know, if you've been a regular listener to this podcast, I've explained in the past, that success rate is a much more better way of measuring running back efficiency because yards per carry is often skewed by long runs. So 50% or higher is very good in the NFL. 40% or higher is good. Anything low below 40% is not necessarily good. And what's interesting is over the last two seasons, Coleman has really struggled to have that sort of efficiency against the Panthers, only having a success rate of 27%, while Devontae Freeman has had that 50% success rate over the last four games against the Panthers. So that was another reason why I was sort of down on the Falcons offense going into this week, because it's just Coleman has not historically had a lot of success. And the reason why you look at his numbers and you say, oh, he's averaged like 4.3 yards per carry. Again, a lot of that has to do with that long run, that 55 yard run he had 2 years ago or whenever it was, which basically, if you remove that from the equation, his yards per carry drops from like 4.3 to 2.8 or something like that. And so that's what I mean when I say yards per carry sort of skews the perception, where, you know, on 35 of his 36 carries, he was averaging less than 3 yards a carry. But anyway, so I think what the Falcons did in this game plan, and kudos to Sark, is they really were like, we're not going to run at Poe. We're not going to run it short up the middle. I think they only ran like three of their designed runs were up the middle, and probably was only successful in like one of those. I think one of them was an Ito run. But for the most part, they attacked the edges of the Falcons. Of the Panthers defense, running off tackles, running tosses, running sweeps and the like and whatnot, and using their speed to try to get the Panthers going sideways, sideline to sideline, which typically isn't necessarily a good way because of Kuechly and Thompson and Davis. Obviously, Davis is suspended, but they have a lot of speed at that position. And early in the game, it wasn't really being successful, but as the game wore on, it seemed to find more success running it. And that's one of the reasons why they were able to get so many third and manageables, because they were having such success running the ball in first and second down. And so that really sort of set it up. So that was a surprise. That certainly deserves a lot of praise from the Falcons. You know, and again, going up against a very formidable Panthers run defense that sort of, you know, their hallmark is their ability to stop the run, to stack the box and stop the run. To do that against this defense, I think is, you know, certainly deserving of a high amount of praise. Another reason why I was sort of down on the Falcons offense going in this game, because I expected, due to the Panthers' ability to stop the run, and due to the fact that I didn't necessarily see exploitable matchups from the other positions, I thought this was going to be the Julio Jones show, and I thought the Falcons were going to need to rely on Julio Jones, as they have done in a number of very hard-fought and close Falcons game where Julio makes the big catch that sort of decides the game, as I'm sure one particular instance you guys are pops into your head right now, and Luke Kuechly might have been on the receiving end of that. But what's interesting about that is I think we saw the Falcons, as I mentioned earlier, really do a good job spreading the ball around. Hooper played well, had some big catches. Hall had a big catch. Ridley, as I mentioned earlier, contributed the ball. Even Logan Paulson had a designed tight end screen that went for a first down. So the Falcons, in addition to their running game, were able to spread the ball around and really sort of attack the Panthers zone. And that's another thing that I'm going to definitely be keying on when I watch the film later this week, to see those instances when they were targeting guys like Hooper and Hall and Ridley. How were they sort of scheming those guys open? To basically wrap up my thoughts on the offense, this is the type of performance that we've been talking about all offseason, about whether or not Sark can produce this type of offensive performance on a consistent basis. He did it this week. He'll have an opportunity to do it next week. And each week, you know, we'll have to ask that question. Is this going to be another week like week two where Sark and the Falcons offense are able to find ways to be productive and live up to their potential? Until we get a couple of games under our belt where that answer is yes, we got one game now. We had another game in week one where the answer was no, But we got one game now, and hopefully those yeses will outnumber the amount of noes. And as we get further along in the season, if we continue to see those yeses outnumber the noes, you know, then I think at a certain point we can be like, okay, this is, you know, all the whole notion of that offseason hype and talk about, you know, Sark just needing a year to get his feet wet, you know, that may be wind up being true. But right now we got one good game, one not so good game. And again, I don't, as I said last week, I don't necessarily blame most of the struggles for the Falcons in week one on Sark, but you know, he is going to be, you know, he had a hand in some of the struggles. So let's not absolve him completely. But yeah, we got one positive from Sark, one not so positive from Sark. And again, as we get further along the season, hopefully those positives outnumber the not so positives and or negatives as we get further along. I want to wrap this thing up by talking about the defense, which won't be necessarily as positive as my praise for the offense. But before we get there, you guys all saw and heard the crowd get behind the Falcons in this game. And why not yourself be part of that crowd by checking out the Falcons at their next home game? And you can do that with Vivid Seats. And with Vivid Seats, you can attend concerts, shows, or Falcons games of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section or row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play right now and download the Vivid Seats app. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event this season. All right, let's talk about the defense. And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to be necessarily praising the defense. I know some people will be out there and be like, oh, they only gave up this many points and it was two garbage fourth quarter touchdowns that made it look closer than what it was and blah, blah, blah. But for my money, it's like my issues with the Falcons defense were why they were able to give up those two late scores that made this game a lot closer and really came, you know, the Panthers had an opportunity to tie this game in the final play of the game, largely due to the non-existent pass rush. We talk quite a bit about the pass rush needing to step up to take pressure off of this back seven, particularly this linebacker core and the safety group without Keanu Neal and Deion Jones this week. We talked about the offense needing to step up. They did. I don't think the pass rush stepped up at all. And, you know, they got a couple of sacks. They dial up some pressures with some blitz. Poole got a sack in there. Tack had a sack. They had five hits in this game, which I guess is an improvement. But given the issues that the Panthers had on their offensive line, the fact that only one of their original starters, at least entering training camp, started this game, that was center Ryan Khalil. You know, Matt Khalil was out. Amini Silatulu was their original starting left guard going into the summer. He did not start this game. Darrell Williams is injured. And Trey Turner missed the game with a concussion. And then they shuffled, you know, left tackle Taylor Moten to right tackle, plugged in the guy that they signed this week in Chris Clark to start his first game at left tackle, had Greg Van Rotten, who's been steady at left guard since the middle of camp. Tyler Larson, their backup center, was playing right guard for them. So this was a piecemeal offensive line. And as I said earlier this week, my expectation, my sort of benchmark was that not five hits, but they would get like 8 to 12 hits in this game going up against this offensive line. They didn't do that. And that was a big reason, in my opinion, why the Panthers were able to come back late in this game, because the Falcons were dropping 7 and sometimes 8 guys in the coverage, and Cam Newton was seeing no pressure. And, you know, that's very disappointing in my eyes, because especially given some of these matchups, you know, Tack had a couple of nice plays, but most of his pressures and sacks came on plays where Cam had a ton of time in the pocket and basically was just sitting back there for 4 or 5 seconds. And then eventually Tack would work his way to the quarterback thanks to his effort and his motor. If cleanup sex is all I can take in this game, I guess I'll have to take it. But you guys know that I'm not necessarily a huge fan of cleanup sacks. I thought Grady Jarrett did okay. He did get 3 hits by himself in this game. And there was a couple of times where he was able to get interior pressure. But to me, he was basically a one-man guy out there with a little bit of contributions from Tack. And you know, Poole doing his... Vic Beasley was pretty much a non-factor. Taylor Moton seemingly shut him down. And so I think that was a big reason why the Panthers were able, despite the fact that the Falcons were up two scores with, what, like 4 minutes left, 6 minutes left in the game. And, yeah, sure, the offense sort of, you know, had two successive three and outs, two consecutive three and outs. But, like, the Panthers were able to just, you know, move the ball at will at that point. So, you know, I think the back end guys, I won't be completely negative here. I think, you know, the secondary, particularly the three corners, Poole, Trufant, and Alford played well. I thought Allen played well. He had an interception in this game. You know, the linebackers were understandably not great. Riley didn't play great. I don't think Campbell really stood out. Maybe when I rewatched the film, maybe he played better and was sort of held back from the supporting cast to a certain extent. We saw Kazee get ejected early in this game for a pretty indefensible hit on Cam Newton when he was sliding on a fourth down scramble. I don't expect him to get suspended because Sean Williams didn't get suspended last week for his hit on Andrew Luck. But, you know, if he does get suspended, like, I don't think I can really be like, oh, no, that, how can you, like, how do you just defend that? Like, you just, you know, he's earned the moniker Dirty Damonte for the rest of the season. That's what he's going to be called by me. He's going to be referred to on Twitter by Dirty Damonte. He's going to be referred to on this podcast as Dirty Damonte Kazee. Like, look, I don't think he's like a dirty player, but that was a dirty hit. I don't know what else you can say, like, you know, or even if I don't think it's a dirty hit, it's dirty. Like, I mean, like, I don't think it was the intent was dirty, but it was just like, how do you defend that? You know, like, how do you make that sort of mistake? The guy sliding and you're going to duck your head and aim basically at his head. Even if it was incidental, like, that's just stupid. You know, Christian McCaffrey went off. Again, I'll give the secondary praise until the very end where I do think them playing off allowed some of their Panthers receivers, outside receivers, to, you know, start padding their stats a little bit towards the end and look like and make their stats look a little bit better. Guys like Funches and Torrey Smith and Jarius Wright. But they were, you know, they were attacking the Falcons zone, I'm sorry, throughout the game, and particularly the middle of the field where guys like Duke Riley were. You know, earlier this summer I defended Duke Riley in the sense of I felt like people were judging his performance or judging his career more accurately prematurely because he's not played a whole lot in his brief time in Atlanta. But, like, I wasn't necessarily defending him in the sense that I think he's good. And since that first preseason game, and then he followed up with an improved second preseason game. But since then, he's been, the issues that he's had have shown up in every other preseason game and so far every regular season game. So it's not defending Duke in the sense that, oh, he's good. He's secretly good. It's just like, let's see what he does, you know, once we get, you know, a little further in the season. And, you know, in the meantime, we're going to see struggles like we saw in this game. The last little bit before we wrap these things up are some odds and ends on sort of the injury front. Lavitre did get injured. He aggravated whatever that elbow injury he had this week that held him out of practice one day. Schweitzer came in. I thought Schweitzer stepped up ably in his absence. Don't feel like Poe and Short were huge impacts on this game. Guys like Vernon Butler as well with Schweitzer in the game. So kudos to Wes Schweitzer. We'll have to see sort of the seriousness of Lavitre's injury as I'm recording this about 2 hours after the Falcons. The end of that game, haven't heard any updates on any of these guys that got hurt. But notably, Lavitre didn't finish his game. Shelby didn't finish his game with a groin injury left in the second quarter. Jack Crawford stepped in and played defensive end in the base defense, which led to some opportunities for Terrell McClain to get more snaps in the nickel as a D-tackle, which didn't necessarily lead to great pass rushing success. But we'll have to see if that's a serious injury with Shelby. And if it is, then the Falcons are probably certainly going to sign another defensive end this week to sort of fill that role because they just don't really have another guy other than Jack Crawford on the roster that can really play that role. That's not really a role that Stephen Means is going to be able to play. And, you know, we didn't see Tack McKinley on the field for the final series. No official word on whether or not he was injured, but you almost have to assume that he was. There's no other reason why he wouldn't be out there in that such a critical moment. But the nature of that injury, whether it's a serious one or a minor one, who knows, but it was enough to keep him out of, like, you know, seven snaps or whatever it was. So we'll have to wait and see, hopefully get some, you know, better injury news than we got a week ago. But, you know, to conclude, let's leave it off on a positive note. Solid bounce back performance from Matt Ryan. His first multiple touchdown rushing performance of his career. His first multiple passing touchdown performance since that Seahawks game in Week 11 of last season. So he had gone a while without throwing more than one touchdown in the game. And you know, the other thing that stood out to me was the 2-minute drill at the end of the first half was probably, arguably, the biggest drive of Sark's tenure here in Atlanta. Because looking back at some of the drive stats over the last season, I think that's only the third time the Falcons have scored a touchdown within the final 2 minutes in the second quarter since Sark took over. And I think that might have been the first time that they actually started a drive with under like 2 minutes to go and scored a touchdown as well. So they've had a couple of field goal drives. So I don't want to sound like they've been completely, but you know, when you go back and you look at the drive stats of sort of the Falcons in like the final 2 to 3 minutes of the second quarter, it is not a good look for this offense. So hopefully we get to see more of that. Maybe that's an indicator that Sark and company are turning the corner. So that's something to be positive and optimistic about. We got a game coming up against the Saints next week. Tomorrow's episode, we will be back with a recap of the game. I'll bring along a guest to help do that. Then Wednesday, we'll do our crossover pod with Locked On Saints hosts, Ross Jackson. Then Thursday, we'll probably do the Q&A, all 22 this week. And then Friday, maybe I think I'll be able to get a fan talk together for this Friday. And so that's what you guys can expect this week. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or whatnot, you can send them my way on Twitter at FalFans. If it's podcast related, just send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Facebook page is Locked On Falcons. The email address is LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at FalFans.com where the show is posted daily. So guys, big win for the Falcons. You know, avoid that 0-2 start and have a pretty favorable matchup against the Saints next week. Even if the Saints weren't, you know, 1-1, almost lost to the Browns, I think the Falcons and Saints are two very similar teams. So I think that's one of the reasons why I've always sort of felt that they match up better with the Saints than a team like the Panthers, because the Panthers don't really play the style of football that the Falcons play. So we'll see what happens next week. But until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.